It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I hope everyone had a fine weekend. You know, over the weekend, I got plenty of different emails, and it's funny. Having been on Top Shot on the History Channel on the first season, I know whenever they play repeats of Episode 3, which is the episode I was on there, and I had some melee back and forth between another contestant by the name of Kelly, 22-year-old guy, and it's interesting. I know whenever they're replaying that episode, or they just replayed that episode, because I get a bunch of email on it. And sure enough, yesterday I get two emails within about 10 minutes to say, you know, you should have been, considered the source when it came to this 22-year-old kid, and you seemed a little out of line, and blah da da. So I have to respond, as I respond to everyone who sends me some sort of criticism over that show, and I let them know, okay, first of all, you say 22-year-old kid, he's in fact a 22-year-old man, just was acting like a kid. And the creative editing of Episode 3 was paramount. I was pissed for several hours. I woke up the next morning, everything was fine. And Top Shot, the people who edit that at the History Channel, decided to make that the drama for the week. So the reality in case was an alternate reality, nowhere close to actually what happened. I went on a tirade on the show, which was probably 20 minutes after the incident between Kelly and I that really keyed this thing off. So, anyhow, it's funny. Certainly enough, I get a couple emails. I go online, or not online. I look up on, the History Channel, and sure enough, they're doing an all day long series of all the different Top Shot shows. They're, you know, going through 7 hours of the episodes that have, already aired. So, had to answer some of those emails. And I'm very, very good with the responses that I give. As a matter of fact, so far I have a 100% conversion rate of the people who have sent me the negative emails that have responded back and said, you know what, thanks a bunch for the email. I guess I kind of jumped the gun because I kind of disarm them. With one exception, one of the emails that I responded to yesterday, I have not gotten a response to yet. But, you know, maybe that person doesn't check their email each and every day. With the exception of the people who used to get on, I used to have on the 2A radio site. People either find me through 2A radio and send me an email, or they go to BillCarnes.com and send me an email. One of those two sources is how I get them. And then sometimes even on Facebook, they'll look me up and send me a message. But on 2ARadio.com, to contact me, there used to be an email submission form where you fill out the form and then you send and I get the email. And, because people were so, so wussified that they wouldn't put in a real live email address or a real live name. They just put in a bunch of disparaging remarks and send it to me, to where I couldn't even respond. It was like, coward sniping is what it was. So what I did was I took that email form down, and now if you want to get a hold of me, you have to send me an actual email. There is no blind, telephone tough guy sort of a thing. So anyhow, we've got plenty to come. We're going to talk about NFA guns and the National Firearms Act and NFA trust and things after the break when we return. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're listening right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about NFA guns. The reason is I've gotten probably half a dozen emails in the last 4 days about NFA guns and NFA trusts. NFA stands for National Firearms Act. Now, the National Firearms Act that came through in 1932, 1934, something like that, what it did was it limited guns, and it separated them into classes, Class 1, Class 2, Class 3 type of guns. NFA guns, guns that are classified as anything other than Class 1, are referred to as an NFA gun because they went through that piece of legislation. Essentially, what that legislation intended to do was to take guns that were fully automatic, through, as in machine guns and submachine guns, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, what they also would refer to as a destructive device like a grenade launcher, silencers, things that would suppress the sound. They call them a silencer. In fact, it's a suppressor. And then any other weapons is another class, which would be like a cane gun or a wallet gun, you know, different things like that, like improvised guns, like a palm gun, things of that nature. So these are classified into Class 1, Class 2, and Class 3 guns. Class 3 is essentially a lot of these NFA guns that would include those that I just mentioned. And a lot of state, now here's the deal, federally speaking, you're allowed as a citizen to own these guns, own these different items. States, however, may, at their own discretion, limit these different guns. All right? Again, you got machine guns and submachine guns. The difference is which, by the way, guys, a submachine gun shoots a pistol caliber round. A machine gun shoots a rifle caliber round. So there are some guns out there that are actually machine guns that shoot a rifle caliber round. However, they have the size of a submachine gun. H&K makes a couple of them. There's, I think FN makes a couple of them. They actually shoot a rifle caliber round in a very, very compact gun. Anyhow, just so you understand. Now, of these different guns, states will allow certain things and disallow other things. I'll give you an example. Top of the list alphabetically, Alabama. They allow machine guns, silencers, any other weapons, and destructive devices, but they do not allow short-barreled rifles and short-barreled shotguns. All right. Now, a short-barreled rifle is anything with a barrel under 16 inches and or an overall length less than 26 inches. All right. Now, a short-barreled shotgun is anything less than an overall length of 26 inches or a barrel length less than 18 inches. So a shotgun needs to have a barrel length of a minimum of 18 inches and a rifle needs to have a barrel with a minimum length of 16 inches. Now, you might remember back in the days of Ruby Ridge, that whole thing was set up by an undercover ATF agent that sold Randy Weaver a shotgun with a barrel that was 17 7/8 inches. Hence, now it was an NFA disallowed firearm. So that was their entrapment, really, for going in and taking Ruby Ridge and killing his wife and all the other mayhem that happened there. We don't need to rehash. Many states either have yeses across the board for everything or noes across the board for everything. And it's no surprise, a lot of the liberal states, Delaware, no across the board. District of Columbia, no across the board. Hawaii, no across the board. And in Illinois, it's no across the board except for some of the any other weapons you can get. Other than that, you have to have a certain license to be able to have it as a business license, like a class three, a class three owner, FFL dealer, a type nine FFL owner, things like that. Let's see. Right next door in Indiana, yes is across the board. Iowa is, all class threes. Kansas, class threes and no's. Kentucky and Louisiana all the way across the board is yes. Now, how about California? Alright, let's find out about California. California says yes to the any other weapons. They have different classifications, class 3, class 2 and 3 gun dealers for everything else, and then a whatever a type 9 is for destructive devices. And also says certain localities are allowed to have restrictions as well. And not only do you have to have a federal firearms license, state licensing is required for dealers as well. So that means that you can carry these things if you're going to sell to the police or the military. That's really the only way to do it in California, unless you want to have one of the any other weapons, like a cane gun or you know, something along that line. So how do you buy these things? Well, as an individual, what you do is you'll go down to your local police chief or sheriff, wherever you live in the city or the county, and you have to get a signed letter of permission of, okay, yeah, I'll allow you to have one of these things. It's okay with me, right? And you have to get that. You have to do fingerprints. You have to do photograph. You have to do an extensive background check and then submit. And then you wait 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it might be, to get the approval back. Now, there's two other ways to go on about owning NFA guns. Another way is if you have a corporation. The corporation can buy the guns, and then any officer of that corporation with those corporate paperwork that shows that the that you are an officer, you have ID, you're an officer of the corporation, that you can then possess those guns. And then you avoid doing the background check, the fingerprints, and the letter from the police chief or sheriff. However, if the corporation ever dissolves, you're going to have to sell the guns off. And even if you want to end up buying them yourself, you have to pay the transfer tax. Every time you buy something like this, for the most part, it is a $200 tax stamp. There are some $5 stamps on some certain things, some of the short-barreled shotguns, some of the destructive devices. There are some $5 transfers, but for the most part, it's $200 for each and every item. If you buy a suppressed submachine gun, it's $200 for the suppressor, $200 for the submachine gun. And every time that it transfers, it's another $200. They call it a tax stamp. They actually put a stamp, which costs $200, on your form. Now, so there's some of the issues with a corporate purchase. The other way is to have an NFA trust, a trust set up specifically and only for the purposes of NFA guns. Now, a lot of people research on the internet, oh yeah, ATF is coming down, it's hammering a bunch of different NFA trusts, and that's because these trusts are not set up properly. Now, I set up NFA trusts, and the main body of the NFA trust that I set up is set up by who is probably the leading NFA attorney, trust attorney, in the entire country. It is so far what is referred to as bulletproof, and in over 100 uses of this primary body of this form, the ATF has not had a single issue on anything dealing with a single one of the forms. It has been flawless. Because if they have an issue, they will let you know. And if it is not usable, they will not approve your NFA request. Now, here's the beauty of the NFA trust. You don't have to go visit the police chief or sheriff. You don't need to get a letter from them. No background check, no photograph, no fingerprints, none of that, which means the whole process goes a lot further. It gives you a whole lot more leeway with the actual trust and the possession, usage, and storage of these guns. Anybody who is a trustee on this trust can hold on to the guns, can store the guns, can use the guns. That's the beauty of an NFA trust. You can add trustees. You can subtract trustees. You go through the minutes. Let's say that, you know, your brother-in-law wants to go out and play with these things. That's fine. You add your brother-in-law on through the minutes. You go through all the proper things. You get the notary public on there. Okay, now he keeps a copy of the trust with him. He has his ID and the guns. And as a trustee, he's on there. He can use the guns. Be in possession of the guns, store the guns. You want them back, you get the agreement to get them back, and if you no longer want him on there as a trust, you do more minutes, you do more notary, and he's no longer a trustee. So, the other big problem with the personally owned is If you, for some reason or another, unfortunately die, then there's a big issue with the NFA guns when it comes to the ATF. If, on the other hand, it's through the trust, you have a beneficiary, and the beneficiary ends up with the trust and the guns, and there's no problems with NFA. Coming up, after the break, we're going to talk about this a little more. Call in if you have any questions about this. And this commercial coming up tells you how to get a hold of my NFA trust. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, again, if you want to learn a little bit more about all of this NFA, go to BillCarnes.com, B-I-L-L-C-A-R-N-S. There is no E in my last name, but if you happen to put in C-A-R-N-E-S, it should direct you to the proper site. Click on the NFA Guns tab. It says NFA Guns with a question mark, as if you have questions about that, click on it. It explains the information I explained in the last segment. You can read through it. There's also a link you can click on. It says, here's a list to use as a guideline for which states allow various NFA guns and accessories. And you click on that list, and it takes you state by state and lets you know what the provisions are. If you would like to own a machine gun, silencer, suppressor actually, a short-barreled rifle, short-barreled shotgun, any other weapon, or destructive device. Again, any other weapon is really kind of the thing that's a little goofy. It's like if you want a cane gun or a wallet gun or a pen gun, something along that lines. Destructive device would be like an M203 or M79 grenade launcher, USAS-12 shotgun or a Striker shotgun. Short-barreled shotgun, again, is anything with a barrel less than 18 inches and an overall length less than 26. Short-barreled rifle, anything less than 16-inch barrel, overall length less than 26. And a machine gun would be anything, whether it's machine gun or submachine gun. Again, the difference is submachine gun if it shoots a pistol caliber, machine gun if it shoots a rifle caliber. Now, you can easily go to an attorney. And there are, if you go online, I get this a lot too. There's an attorney in Florida, I believe it is, who has a website that says, you have to go through an attorney, you have to do this, you have to do that to make everything just legal. And it's total lies, it's total BS. Whoever creates a trust is actually unknown unless you decide to write it on the bottom of the sheet of paper, as a subtext bit. Okay, this trust was put together by so-and-so attorney's office. That's total BS. You can go anywhere. You can do all sorts of legal actions. You can get a divorce. You can create a trust. You can create a corporation. You never need an attorney for any of it. The only thing an attorney does is an attorney is supposed to know the laws and the way things go, so it's supposed to be easier to use them. However, they're high-priced people. You pay them a lot of money. They do a lot of stuff. Now, the basic trust body and form that I use is good. For all of the states that allow NFA trusts, we change a few things up in there, and I get you the trust. My process is about 2 to 3 days, and my cost is far, far, far less than what these attorneys are going to charge, because they're going to make you believe all this fancy stuff, which is not the case. This trust has been used in many states and has been used over 100 times and never a problem. We just need to get the proper state information in there, the city, state, county that you reside in. You know, make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and everything is fine. And when you get the trust, if you live in the state of Nevada, if you live in southern Nevada, I am also a notary public. And what I do is I will actually get everything all done up and notarized for you. If not, I give you all of the instructions on how everything needs to get done. I send you the trust. Once all the signatures are made and all of the notaries are done, then the trust is in effect. Bam, you don't have to register it with the city, county, or state, none of that. When you send in your NFA paperwork, there are certain things to fill out. There are certain things that you no longer need to fill out when you send in your Form 1 or your Form 4, whatever it is that you're buying and that you're sending in to the ATF. Short-barreled rifle, short-barreled shotgun is a Form 1. If you're doing a silencer, suppressor, a.k.a., or a machine gun, you do a Form 4. And there's different ways to fill these things out if you have a trust, because there's not all the personal information that is in there. And it needs to be all filled out in the name of the trust. The attorneys are going to charge you upwards of between $1,500 and $3,000 to create a trust. I am far, far less than that. My flat rate is $500, unless you actually have some sort of specialty things going on. But my flat rate's $500. I get it done in 2 or 3 days and have it to you. And I can do it in one of two ways. I can either print it out on the paper that I standardly use for a trust, which is a very, very nice linen paper. It is a unique paper. It's very, very nice stuff. I used to be in the printing field, so I know a fair amount about paper. And I mail it to you, or I can send it to you in a PDF format, which then saves any mailing time. I email it to you in a PDF format. You print it out on a very nice paper and keep the whole thing together, and then get all the signatures and everything done in the notaries. And from the, I could email it to you in that day or even the next, it could be in effect. And then from there, you can, you know, pay for the guns and go through all of the ATF sorted affairs. Now, here's the beauty of using the trust is, since you don't have to do the background check, you don't have to verify photographs and fingerprints. In that case, your paperwork from ATF comes back much faster, because it goes to the review process, and then once the review process, it goes to the background process, and from the background process, it goes to the approval process. If there's no background process, which takes the longest time, it goes into the inbox to make sure everything is there, then it goes through the approval process, and you get your paperwork a whole heck of a lot faster. So there you go. If you have any questions about that, email me, bill@2aradio.com or info@billcarnes.com. Either one will work just fine. And I'll get back to you. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
That's true. Actually, I had an NFA trust put together and registered my mouth through it. It was a $200 tax stamp, but now I'm able to blaze. Guys, the Heller decision and then the McDonald decision and everything being wrapped up in them is spawning lawsuits all across the country for what are now unconstitutional laws. And it's interesting the way that it goes. As you go to the highest court in the land, the highest court in the land says anything that doesn't fit within these provisions is unconstitutional. And then you go down and you see all of these laws that are now unconstitutional, but in order to get them to be labeled as unconstitutional or repealed, you've got to sue at your own expense go to court, take it to the judge and say, Judge, the Supreme Court said that this law is unconstitutional based on these provisions. This law that you have doesn't fit within the provisions of the Supreme Court's decision, so we need to have this ruled unconstitutional. Instead of it just happening, it's this long, drawn-out thing, and it's very expensive. And we didn't pass the laws, we didn't enforce the laws, we only had to pay to have the judges interpret the laws, and now we have to go back and pay again through all of the court filings to say, look, this law is illegal. Now, the Second Amendment Foundation is doing just that again. It's filing a federal lawsuit on behalf of a Maryland man whose gun permit renewal was refused because he couldn't demonstrate, quote, a reasonable precaution against apprehended danger. A reasonable precaution against apprehended danger. So you have to believe that you know that danger's coming before they'll give you, author you, provide you with the privilege of protecting yourself with a gun when it's a right? Well, Raymond Woolard, he's a Maryland resident. His home was literally invaded by a man on Christmas Eve in 2002 as the Woolard family gathered to celebrate the holidays. Woolard grabbed a shotgun, but the thug decided to fight. While they were grappling over the gun, Woolard's son grabbed another gun and held the suspect waiting for police to arrive. And there lies a problem. As it turns out, according to court documents, it took the police approximately 2.5 hours to arrive. They're holding a suspect on Christmas Eve at gunpoint. It took them 2.5 hours to arrive. Why? Because the local police couldn't decide in which county Woolard's home was located. Now, adding insult to injury, when this guy went to trial, he was sentenced to 3 years of probation. He subsequently was arrested for assaulting a police officer and burglarizing another home. Now, those convictions put him behind bars, but not for too long. Now, the lawsuit filed by Second Amendment Foundation alleges that, quote, individuals cannot be required to demonstrate that carrying a handgun is necessary and as a reasonable precaution against apprehended danger as a prerequisite for exercising their Second Amendment rights. Now, the plaintiffs are seeking a permanent injunction against enforcement of the Maryland provision that requires permanent applicants to, quote, demonstrate cause for the issuance of a carry permit. They say laws that empower bureaucrats to deny the exercise of a fundamental civil right because they cannot show good cause to exercise that right can't possibly stand up under constitutional scrutiny. And that's according to Second Amendment Foundation Executive Vice President Alan Gottlieb. He says, we are supporting Mr. Woolard in this action because constitutional rights trump bureaucratic whims. Absolutely right. I've spoken to Alan Gottlieb. He's a heck of a good guy. Now, Woolard, according to the lawsuit, was issued a permit to carry a handgun. He renewed that permit in 2005, soon after the burglar was released from prison. That burglar now lives about 3 miles from Woolard. When he applied for a second renewal in early 2009, Woolard was advised that his application was incomplete. The reason? Evidence is needed to support apprehended fear, i.e. copies of police reports for assaults, threats, harassment, stalkings. So someone has to have telegraphed their violence against you, right? So on April 1st, 2009, Woolard's permit renewal was denied by Terrence B. Sheridan, Secretary and Superintendent of the Maryland State Police. He applied to the Maryland Handgun Permit Renewal Board, and last November, board members Dennis Gallagher, Seymour Goldstein, and Charles M. Thomas Jr. ruled against Woolard. Can you believe this? The lawsuit named Sheridan, Goldstein, Gallagher, and Thomas as defendants. Good. This is a similar challenge to the federal lawsuit filed by Second Amendment Foundation 2 weeks ago in federal courts in New York against officials in Westchester County for denying gun permits to two people. Now, several years ago, lawmakers in Olympia, Washington, the home of Second Amendment Foundation. They're out of Bellevue. Passed legislation that takes away this kind of discretionary authority from local officials. The law requires that the the chief of police of a municipality or the sheriff of a county shall, within 30 days after the filing of an application of any person, issue a license to such person to carry a pistol concealed on his or her person within the state for 5 years from date of issue, for the purposes of protection or while engaged in business, sport, or while traveling, end quote. This is all discussed in a book known as Washington State Gun Rights and Responsibilities. Pardon me, it's actually, there's a typo here. Washington State Gun Rights and Responsibilities. So if you live up in Washington, you can check that out. Now, the chief of police of a municipality or sheriff of a county shall within 30 days issue that license. Now, here's the deal. It's 30 days that you need to wait at maximum for them to say, okay, and it's good for 5 years. I see a problem with that. This last Thursday in Arizona, they went to the same law that they have in Vermont and in Alaska called constitutional carry. If you are otherwise not permitted to own a gun, such as you have a felony conviction, a domestic violence conviction, or you've been deemed mentally unstable due to certain qualifications, and you can legally own a handgun in Arizona, you can carry it exposed, you can carry it concealed, doesn't really matter, you don't need any special permission. Okay, that's really the way it ought to be. Now, here's the caveat on my part, being a professional firearms trainer and having been for some time, I'm one of maybe two dozen qualified five weapons defensive range masters in the country. Okay, so take it from a position of authority. It's my opinion, my very strong and heartfelt opinion, if you're going to carry a gun, be it exposed or concealed, it doesn't matter, you need to get quality training from a real-life defensive firearms trainer. Not someone that stands there on the range and teaches you to shoot a bullseye sheet of paper. That's not going to do you any good. That'll teach you gun handling. It'll teach you marksmanship. But it won't teach you anything when it comes to presentation, shot placement, how to react, what to look for in reactions of others, securing your area, dealing with police. You need to have an honest-to-goodness defensive firearms instructor, high-end quality person, and go through some training with them. It'd be the same thing if you didn't have to have a specialty license to drive a big rig. So you just go out and you buy a big rig and you start driving it. You probably should ought to have done something along the lines of learning a little bit about it. Hey, you know what? I can buy it. I should ought to be able to drive it. Or I've driven a little bit before in a little Ford Festiva, two-door nothing. So now I'm going to drive an 18-wheeler big rig. You know, guys, here's the deal. You need to have a little bit of prudence. You need to do a little bit of due diligence on your part. If you're going to carry, if you already carry now and you haven't had any actual defensive training, don't shake your head and say, Connor doesn't know what he's talking about. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I used to be in your shoes. I carried a gun, and I really didn't have any defensive training at all. So I took a class at Gunsight, and that got me up to the fundamentals where I had good gun handling, good marksmanship. I could present my gun from a concealed holster. However, I still only had a basic idea of tactics. I really didn't understand them, and I needed to polish all of the basics. You can learn just so much before you have to go home and practice dry, go out to your range, load up live, and do these things, and then start getting comfortable in your shoes in what we call a comfort and skill at arms, a very popular term used throughout the gun industry, comfort and skill at arms. So if you carry a gun on a daily basis, it's for defensive uses, but if you haven't gone through defensive training with the gun, you're doing yourself an injustice. You need to know what to do with the gun, how to do it, how to carry yourself, how to react, because if you shoot somebody, you know that the cops are going to be there. How to handle that properly. Some people say there's nothing in the world I'm going to say when the cops show up except I need to talk to an attorney. Okay, well, imagine this. A couple of bad guys come after you. They begin an attack. You pull out your gun. You shoot one of them. His gun falls in a bush 5 feet away from him. And the bushes are dense. The other guy runs. As he's running, he throws his gun or knife on a rooftop. And when the cops show up, they start asking you questions. You say, I don't want to talk to anybody but an attorney. Now, the guy that ran away also called the cops and said, this guy went crazy and shot my buddy and tried to shoot me. Okay, now what happens? Well, then you need to say something to the cops. The cops show up and say, you know, this is my name. Here's my ID. I was the victim of an attack. When they launched their attack, I presented my gun out. I shot this guy. When he fell, his gun ended up in those bushes. You might want to find it. The bushes are kind of dense. And his buddy ran off, throwing his gun or knife, whatever he had, on the roof of that building. If you could, you know, so there's the information. Right now, my mind is going a million miles an hour with all of this stuff. I'm really still very shaken up. I haven't been through anything like this before. It's been a long, long time since I've been through any stress like this, whatever it is. And I'd really just like to sit and relax and wait for my attorney to show up. He should be on his way. And, you know, given that basic information, okay, all right, that's fine. You know, go ahead and chill out and relax. So you said just what you needed to, nothing more. Okay? And nothing too little, just enough information. And then you can also ask, you know, can I go home now? Towards the end of this deal. All right, well, you know, we found that gun. We found the knife up here. The other guy that called, we have him in custody, blah, da, 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 da. You know, do you have anything else to say? Yeah. Can I go home to my family now? Can I go home now? Okay, so oftentimes you'll be able to go home. All right. So we're going to, if you happen to have, let me tell you something about Second Amendment Foundation. If you happen to be in a state or locality, a city, a county, that requires all of this undue paperwork and approval process, this mother may I system of having guns, my suggestion is call the Second Amendment Foundation. Let them know what's going on. You have to have been wronged within the system in regards to the Heller decision and the McDonald decision at the Supreme Court. You have to have been wronged. And the locality, the municipality, the county, the state that you live in has to have wronged you. And it has to be where it's the wronging that was done to you was due to a law which is in violation of Heller / McDonald. If that's happened, give a call to the Second Amendment Foundation and let them know. They might come on board with you. Now, the beauty of it is, the Second Amendment Foundation is taking things directly to federal court because it was a federal ruling out of the Supreme Court. So it would affect the entire state. So they're not fighting at the local level. They're taking it to the federal level for that state and all the governments that that little state answers to. If it's a city government, it would also affect the county that they're in and the state that they're in. That's how bright and brilliant the Second Amendment Foundation is with all of this. They are fighting for our rights. If you're not a member of Second Amendment Foundation, I suggest you look into it. All right, Second Amendment Foundation has been doing a lot of good things for a very long time. Alan Gottlieb has his head screwed on straight. Let me tell you, Second Amendment Foundation is the organization that took McDonald to the Supreme Court. A lot of people believe it was the NRA. The NRA was not behind McDonald directly. They were in support of it. NRA had a separate case that was on its way to the Supreme Court, which was held up because the McDonald case got there first. So, just so you understand, Second Amendment Foundation's a great cause. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. Take me back to the side.
The American Dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
All right, folks, welcome back. Now, here's something big I want to talk to you about. It's called HR 2296, which is the BATFE Reform and Firearms Modernization Act. All right. And that is the NRA ILA's latest effort to pass legislation that will make it easier for lawful gun owners and dealers to comply with federal law and regulations while ensuring that those who break the law are punished accordingly. Now, it's a bipartisan bill. It serves as a pretty important step towards modernizing and improving the BATFE's overall operation, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And I've actually used BATFE as Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms on everything. Okay. Anyhow, this bill, it's going to roll back unnecessary restrictions. It's going to correct a bunch of errors and codify longstanding congressional policies in the firearms arena. Of highest importance, HR 2296 totally rewrites the system of administrative penalties for licensed dealers, manufacturers, and importers of firearms. Today, for most violations, BATFE can only give a federal firearms licensee holder, an FFO holder, a warning or totally revoke their license. That's it. And it's entirely discretionary up to them what they want to do. I know an FFL dealer who had his license revoked because on one Form 4473, when somebody was filling it out, under county, they put USA as opposed to the county there. And they looked at county and country. One has an R, one does not, otherwise the spelling's the same. Put USA. They took his license away. Now, HR 2296 would allow fines for license suspensions for less serious violations while still allowing license revocations for the kind of serious violations that would block an investigation or put guns in the hand of criminals. To prevent this all-too-common situation where BATFE has punished licensees for insignificant technical violations such as improper use or of abbreviations or for filing records in the wrong order, right? It would put an end to that. So HR 2296 has 233 co-sponsors, and we want to know if you will call your congressman and let him know that you would like them to support House Resolution 2296, HR 2296. All you have to do to find out how to get a hold of them is to type your congressman in to Google, and it will give you the contact information, or just put in there House of Representatives switchboard, and you can call that number and be transferred to their office. I hope you'll do that. We need HR 2296 to pass the House and then move on and pass the Senate.
I'd like to close by saying, To those of you within our government, we will be watching you, Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.